I'm Rachel Stassenberger, the political editor for The Register, and welcome to the Des Moines Register's political soapbox. Let's go over some ground rules. First, there is no heckling, because this is an Iowa nice crowd, and they will turn on you if you are not nice. Second, no signs. Why? Because the people behind you can't see. Again, Iowa nice. And now we have Montana Governor Steve Bullock up on the stage. He's a Democrat, and he's going to speak to you.
Thanks so much, Rachel. Thank you for having me at the soapbox. I never thought I'd be competing against big wheel races in life. And as Rachel said, I am from Montana, and I know that you have people all the time from out of state that tries to make some, you know, unique or distinct connection to Iowa. So I'm not going to tell you that my great-great-grandfather settled in Henry County in 1856. I won't tell you that my mom was born in Ottumwa, or by some surprise, my mom's first cousin, Jim Clark, is joining us here today. What I want to talk about, though, is actually something that impacts, I think, all of us and our connection overall to the electoral system. It was in 1907 when a newspaper in Montana opined, "The greatest living issue confronting us today is whether the corporation shall control the people or the people shall control the corporations." And let's fast forward a century now. And should we be asking the same question? Because fundamentally, over the last decade, we've seen trust in government disappear in a way that we hadn't seen in the past. We can talk about the 2016 election, but I'll even take you back to 2013. There's a poll that said, what do you have a more favorable view of, Congress or? What we learned is Americans thought more of head lice, cockroaches, and colonoscopies even than Congress. Trust in government has disappeared in some ways, but more than that, the ability to govern has fundamentally been eroded in the last 10 years. We can talk about the big issues like immigration reform, or we can talk about climate change. They can't even pass a farm bill right now. Most deleterious, though, is I think Americans' trust in the institutions are fading. Fundamentally, I've always believed one of the great equalizers that we have is we are all equal on election day. Our voice is our vote. But what we've seen more and more when people start losing trust in the ability to impact elections or even the representative democracy, trust in government starts to fade and that social contract that we all have. Now, I say this all happened in the last 10 years. And I'll tell you what happened if we can't remember what happened about 10 years ago. In 2010, there was a little case called Citizens United. Citizens United was the first time in our country that it actually equated money and speech and corporations and people. Not only did that allow unlimited corporate spend in our election, but this thing called dark money, money that's actually spent in our elections that's not disclosed by anyone or anything, began creeping into our elections. Think about 2004, $5 million was spent of dark money, undisclosed money in our federal elections. Fast forward just 8 years, it was $300 million, a 6,000% increase in just 8 years of dark money pouring into our elections. Now, more than just influencing our elections, it really has fundamentally impacted the way that government works or doesn't work. It wasn't that long ago the Republicans would say, yes, climate change is real, and we have to do something about it. That's now a third rail today in the Republican Party. Or even think about this recent tax cut that happened, $1.9 trillion of debt on our kids and our grandkids. Senator Graham said afterwards, we had to do this to make our donors happier, to appease our donors. If we want to address all the other big issues in our electoral system, in our political system, if we really want to address income inequality, if we want to address health care, if we want to address rights, you're not going to be able to do it until you've also addressed the way that money is corrupting our system. And I'll take you back, though, to 2010. When that decision came down, we often forget Democrats controlled both houses of Congress and the presidency. Washington, D.C. is becoming a place where talking about doing things is actually the substitute for actually doing it. Now, we can raise money off of it. We can tweet all we want off of it. We can talk about it, but we need to do something about it. So I want to tell you a little bit about what we did in Montana to address this. It not only impacts Montana, but impacts fundamentally, hopefully, everywhere in this country. We'll talk about that a little bit. And then I'll also open it up, because what could go wrong competing against big wheels? I'd love to have some questions by the end of this, too. So Montana had a 100-year history of making sure that corporations could not spend money in our elections. I was attorney general before I was governor, and the Citizens United case came up. And the Citizens United, so we actually wrote the brief, state of Montana did, that the majority of states signed on to in that case. And our point was, you can monkey with the federal elections, but the vast majority of elections actually happen at our state and local level. And it doesn't take a Russian oligarch or a corporate treasury to buy a county auditor's race. So we have to preserve at least our state races. Supreme Court didn't quite agree with us on that on a 5-4 decision. Every other state said, game over. There's nothing that we can do. But we had a 100-year history in Montana of clean elections. So I was attorney general at the time. I put together a case. I actually got Republicans to testify about even the threat of corruptive influence of independent expenditures on our process. We won at the Montana Supreme Court. The Montana Supreme Court said states have a compelling reason to make sure that corporations aren't spending and buying in our elections. Went up to the U.S. Supreme Court. First decision after Citizens United. So excited. I was attorney general. We were going to save Montana and parts of the country. 5-4 decision, unfortunately forever called ATP versus Bullock, we lost. Now, it's easy to give up on a representative democracy at that point, but then I took a different tact. I was governor at the time, and I brought Republicans and Democrats together to pass one of the most progressive disclosure laws in the country. What it says is 90 days out from an election, if you want to spend in our elections, you have to tell where that money's coming from and who wrote the checks. 2016, even the Koch brothers stayed out of our state elections. And if we can do that in places like that, by bringing folks together, I don't think Montana's unique. We've taken it a couple steps further. Just about 3 months ago, I signed an executive order that said any company that wants to contract with the state of Montana, you have to disclose how you're spending in our state to influence elections. If you're going to get taxpayer dollars, you need to ultimately, we ought to, as the taxpayers, try to know at least how you want to influence our elections. First of its kind, and we're still not stopping there. Today, a month ago today, was a pretty big day. A month ago today, President Trump was with Putin in Helsinki saying there was zero Russian interference in our elections. That was 1 month ago today. But a month ago today, something else happened as well. The Treasury Secretary stood up and said, you know, there's been this rule in place that these 501c4s, these corporations that get involved in politics, that they have to disclose their donors to the IRS. And we're going to repeal that rule. That was a month ago today. Think about this. Now, truly a Russian could write a check and influence our elections. We would never even know. Truly, other companies could be flowing from other companies. Not even the IRS knows, and certainly our states and our charitable officers don't know. This rule was around since 1971. Richard Nixon was not kind of the model of good government and transparency. So we can accept this as like, this is the new, that corporations can control any part of our elections, any part of the process, or we can do it, something about it. That's another area where then this, that I and my Department of Revenue sued in federal court. That case is pending, and I think that we will be able to roll that back. Now, my point in all of this is that Montana is not unlike Iowa in some respects. Legislature is almost two-thirds Republican. If you look back to the 2016 election, Donald Trump took Montana by 20 points. I was up for re-election. I won by 4. The only Democrat in the country to get reelected in a state where Donald Trump won, 25 to 30% of my voters, or 20 to 30% of my voters also voted for Donald Trump. And if we can do this in Montana, it underscores to me that Look, this isn't a Democrat or Republican issue. This is an issue about the fundamental trust and faith in our government. And if folks that come to the state fair don't believe in our government, well, then how are we ever going to make it work yet again? And the way I've gotten elected in Montana is the same way, actually, I get things done through a two-thirds Republican legislature. I show up in places where Democrats aren't always. Actually, I have to talk and engage and work with them along the way. I listen. And I also fundamentally believe we share values and are for many of the same things. So in Montana, if we can pass one of the most progressive disclosure laws in our nation, if we can pass Medicaid expansion, if we can have record investments in our K-12 system where other states are actually gutting it, if we can make public funding for preschool or an earned income tax credit, if you can do that in Montana, you can do that in Iowa, you can do that anywhere in the country. It starts with showing up. It starts with believing we share values, running into obstacles and saying we're not going to just talk about things, we're going to do something about them. It also starts with some of the right candidates and the right people working on your behalf. How many of you are from Iowa?
All right, finish line.
So I've had just the great pleasure of both supporting and working with people like Iowa Attorney General Tom Miller, who's right here. Yesterday, I had a great chance to campaign for Deidre DeGere, who's run for Secretary of State. Tim Gannon, who's running for Secretary of Agriculture. Think of that's another thing. 2006, there are 12 elected ag directors in the nation. 2006, 9 of the 12 were Democrats. Now there are zero. The Democratic Party didn't necessarily change. We just haven't been able to figure out the ways to be speaking to folks off of the coasts. And if we can't speak the language of Iowa or Michigan or Wisconsin and others, even if you can get an electoral majority, you're never going to have a governing majority. I fundamentally believe that the most important thing other than pork bellies on a stick that we ought to be focusing on today is you have 84 days before this election. You have 84 days that are going to define whether your state house under Mark Smith actually goes from minority to majority, or that Janet Peterson actually takes back the state Senate. You have 40 or that many days until we actually recognize whether you're going to have great statewide officials. So I ask all of you to make sure that every one of those days count. Because I fundamentally believe, one of the reasons why I took on Citizens United is I fundamentally believe that elections have to be about people talking to people, about the exchanges of the challenges that folks have, be it at a kitchen table or at a bar, and that engagement. I ask all of you to engage along the way. I ask for us not just to accept what happens in Washington, D.C., but figure out the creative ways to fight back against it. And I also ask us to be for things, not just against them. With that, I sure appreciate being on the soapbox. I'd be willing to answer almost any question. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I'm gonna check the time here.
Looks like we've got one or two more minutes to kill. We got everybody here for the 11:20 races.
State House and other state houses.
So the question was, given the threat and what's happening to the federal government, what are things that you've done and other states are doing to protect democracy and government at the state level? And I think that we really do need to, because unfortunately, you know, you think about, you had even the highway bill. Like a highway bill, funding for our infrastructure should be one of the least controversial things in the world. It took 19 extensions for a six-year bill and 5.5 years or something like that to get that through. So we can't wait for D.C. to work. I'll give you another example of one of the things that we've done in Montana. FCC in December of last year decided to repeal net neutrality. Another great equalizer that, at the end of the day, we all ought to be able to go where we want on the internet, not pay more if we go to one site or another, and just repealed it. So I'm sitting in my office, it's in January, and my assistant comes out and goes, Governor, your daughter's calling through the switchboard. I'm like, why would my daughter call through the switchboard? So I go, and Caroline's 16, I go, hey, Caroline, what's going on? She goes, hello, Governor. And when your 16-year-old daughter says, hello, Governor, you know you're in a lot of trouble. But she said to me, Look, I just called our two senators and our congressman about net neutrality. I'm like, honey, I hope you didn't leave your last name. She goes, no, I didn't. But then she goes, what are you going to do about it? I said, I can't do a thing about it, right? This is a federal issue. So then we started looking at it. We signed an executive order that said, if somebody wants to sell internet services to the state of Montana, you have to preserve net neutrality for the entire, all the citizens of Montana. Now you might think, okay, you don't live in Montana, so this isn't going to make a difference. Then we made the template of that executive order and said, I'd love any governor to sign that. Once little tiny states like New York and New Jersey signed the same executive order, we knew that it could make a fundamental difference. We even got Republican states, now the governor of Vermont doing it. Another issue with healthcare. What we've seen more and more out of Washington, D.C. is attempts to sabotage what's occurred, not say, how do we actually continue to build on it? In Montana, we expanded Medicaid, 100,000 more people covered, but also we worked, and we have a 9% workforce in our Medicaid workforce participation increase, the highest in the nation. There are parts of where governors can come together, and we did that last year, Democrats and Republicans, to say to Washington, D.C., you don't repeal the opportunities for Medicaid. You actually stabilize the system. You don't just tear it all apart. And I think that helped. Long way to say there's a number of ways to do this, one of which is you can find creative ways, like our executive order for net neutrality or campaign finance, to address what Washington, D.C. is not doing. Another way is you can actually come together with other governors and say, because as governors, we don't have the luxury of just giving speeches, right? We actually have to do stuff. And we can come and say, this is how Washington, D.C. is broken. And third and final, like what we did a few weeks ago, every now and then you have to sue them. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am.
Heather Chamberlain, I live up the street.
Heather Chamberlain, who lives up the street.
Yes.
In the event that I could have some role in this world, what could I do to make college education more affordable? And fundamentally, like, that's another thing. So first I'll go back to Montana, right? In Montana, 46 states since the recession have decreased their investments in higher education in real terms by about 17%. If we lived in Arizona, they would have cut state funding for higher education by 45%. In Montana, for my first 4 years, we actually froze college tuition. And then we're one of the only the four states has actually increased it. It's interesting when you think about the fact that, you know, I talk about this federal tax cut, that a lot of it went just to stock buybacks and make other people that much more rich. It'll cost you $1.9 trillion. How much student debt is out there right now? I'll be damned, $1.9 trillion. Maybe that would have been a better investment in the future to actually be working on that than otherwise. But I think that there are a couple different things that we can do. Traditionally, the model for education funding, higher education, other than grants, has been at the state level. The federal government needs to assume a greater role of that. Now, you're not going to change all of the world in as much as about a third of our kids go to private colleges, but making sure that it's a premium, that education is affordable and accessible, and putting more federal dollars in the state, more both not just on loan programs. Look, when I graduated, I went to law school on a credit card. I honestly did, and I'll never forget the day that I paid off my $110,000 loans, that day when my wife finally said I might be a good investment in the future. All of us have this sort of problem, and if we can't both make sure that we're doing the inputs on the state levels, encouraging them, and bring more federal dollars to the programs, you're going to continue on this debt spiral, because what we've seen is education costs have spiraled up so much higher than everything else. I have 1 minute. Yes, sir. The question is, when will I decide if I'm going to do anything after I get a service governor? You know, yeah, and look, I do think that I do have a story of how I've been able to bring people together, and I think that's in part what our country desperately needs. I will tell you, I haven't just gone to Iowa. Before I even went to Iowa, I went to places like Michigan and Wisconsin. 2 weeks ago, Arkansas, as an example, used to be had a Democrat governor, it had a Democrat legislature. It's fundamentally changed. Now, the values of the people have not changed. So right now, what I'm doing is listening, and that's honestly as far as it goes. But I've been so actually blessed with the opportunity both to come to places like here in Iowa. I'm blessed to have a friend like Tom Miller, who's the Attorney General, who I got to serve with when I was AG. And I'm still on the process of... Oh, I thought that was the big wheel causing troubles. And I've had the opportunity to learn more than... So there isn't... That's as far as it goes right now. Thank you again for the opportunity to be here. Very much appreciate it.